Audio version of biographical article for Mumia Abu-Jamal on the English Wikipedia. Part 1b. Four eyewitnesses to the shooting were produced by the prosecution. Firstly, Robert Chobot, a cab driver. Secondly, Cynthia White, a prostitute who was later revealed to be a police informant. Thirdly, Michael Scanlon, a businessman who had been visiting from out of town on the night of the killing. And finally, Albert Magleton, a pedestrian. These witnesses testified that they were at or inside of the scene at the time of the shooting. Chobot and White directly identified Abu-Jamal as the person who shot Faulkner. Scanlon, who admitted to being mildly under the influence of alcohol, testified that he saw someone come across the street and shoot Faulkner. He testified that he was not able to identify either the driver of Cook's vehicle or the shooter, and he placed someone wearing a green army jacket, who could not have been either Cook or Abu-Jamal at the scene. Magleton testified to witnessing Faulkner pull over Cook's car, and that at the point of seeing Abu-Jamal start to cross the street toward them, he turned away and lost sight of what had happened next until he heard gunshots. He did not see anyone shoot anyone else. He also testified that Chobot's vehicle was not at any point parked behind Faulkner's. He reported to defense investigators that he had seen a person wearing a green army jacket fleeing the scene in the aftermath. While Cynthia White testified to witnessing the shootings from a nearby corner, Desi Hightower has stated that he observed her to be at least half a block further away. Prostitute Veronica Jones testified at trial that she had been offered favorable treatment by police on condition that she corroborate Cynthia White. White is acknowledged to have been a police informant and to have received police protection in her illegal prostitution activity both before and after she identified Abu-Jamal as a murderer. She is presently presumed deceased. In her declaration of the 28th of January 2002, Yvette Williams affirms to have been incarcerated with Cynthia White in December 1981 and being told by her that she had not even seen who shot Faulkner, and that she had entirely fabricated a witness account identifying Abu-Jamal out of fear of the Philadelphia police. Police informant Pamela Jenkins testified at a post-conviction relief hearing on the 26th of June 1997 that she had been pressured by Philadelphia police officers to falsely state that she had witnessed the killing of Faulkner and could identify Abu-Jamal as the murderer. She also testified that she knew Cynthia White to be in fear of her life from police in the period after the shooting of Faulkner and before the trial of Abu-Jamal, and that she claimed to have found Miss White in the company of some Philadelphia police as recently as March 1997, being some years subsequent to the date of her presumed death. Robert Chobot originally told police that the shooter had run away. In his 25th September 2001 affidavit, private investigator George Newman describes that under interrogation, Chobot had recanted the aspect of his testimony that his taxi had been parked directly behind Faulkner's police car, as well as the assertion that he had witnessed a person firing bullets into the body of Faulkner as the latter lay prone on the ground. The prosecution presented three additional witnesses, security officer Priscilla Durham, and two members of the Philadelphia Police Department who testified that while Abu-Jamal was being treated for gunshot wounds, he had at least once or even twice proclaimed, "I shot the motherfucker, and I hope the motherfucker dies." Other witnesses are recorded as having reported that Abu-Jamal was completely unconscious during the time that he was reported to have said this. The original report of Gary Waxhaw, a police officer who confirms to having accompanied Abu-Jamal through the entire period of his arrest and medical treatment, relates that, quote, "the Negro male made no comments." Waxhaw elsewhere later stated that he witnessed Abu-Jamal's utterance of this supposed confession, alleged confession, on the night of the killing, such statement by himself being made almost 3 months after the arrest and upon the occasion when the prosecutor met with police seeking to test the evidence about Abu-Jamal's alleged utterances. Waxhaw is reported as having reasoned that he, quote, "didn't think the confession was important," unquote, at the time he wrote his original report. Judge Albert F. Sabo did not permit the trial jury to receive Gary Waxhaw's original report as evidence. A number of witnesses made statements either to police on the scene or in court testimony or both, describing the fact of one or more men running along the street after the shooting. At trial, the defense presented statements made by four of these witnesses. Deborah Kordansky, Robert Chobot, Veronica Jones, and Desi Hightower. This became known as the Running Man Theory, based on the possibility that a running man may have been the actual shooter. Of those witnesses, only Chobot averred to actually witnessing the shooting. He testified that shortly after the shooting, he had told police he had seen Abu Jamal shoot Faulkner in the face, that Abu Jamal had then run a short distance and collapsed on the sidewalk, himself also having been shot by Faulkner. In other words, Chobot's testimony was that Abu Jamal himself was the running man. The remaining three witnesses made various statements about a man or men running in or away from the area. None of them claimed that the running man or men were involved in the shooting. The defense also presented nine character witnesses, including poet Sonia Sanchez. Sanchez testified that Abu Jamal was, quote, viewed by the black community as a creative, articulate, peaceful, genial man, unquote. During cross-examination, the prosecution raised the issue of her association with convicted felon and Black Panther activist Joanne Chesimard. Sanchez was also asked, over defense objections, whether she supported other blacks who had killed police. Abu Jamal did not testify in his own defense. Regarding this, he has explained, quote, at my trial, I was denied the right to defend myself. I had no confidence in my court-appointed attorney, who never even asked me what happened the night I was shot and the police officer was killed, and I was excluded from at least half the trial. Since I was denied all my rights at my trial, I did not testify. I would not be used to make it look like I had a fair trial, unquote. He did not state his version of events for the initial police investigation, nor for almost another 20 years afterwards, until subsequent to his third set of lawyers offering the 1999 affidavit of Arnold Beverly. Beverly purported to confess that, wearing a green camouflage army jacket, he had run across the street and shot a fallen Daniel Faulkner in the face as part of a contract killing connected with a desire to keep Faulkner from interfering with graft and payoff to corrupt police. Abu Jamal's May 2001 sworn statement avers that he had been sitting in his cab across the street when he first heard shouting, then saw a police vehicle, then heard the sound of gunshots. It further asserts that upon seeing his brother standing in the street, staggering and appearing disoriented, he ran across the street to him and was shot by a uniformed police officer. It also incorporates his claim to have been tortured by police while he was still in need of medical assistance for his wounds. It concludes with his claim of innocence. I never said I shot the policeman. I did not shoot the policeman. I never said I hoped he died. I would never say something like that, unquote. For a similar period, William Cook also did not testify or make any statement whatsoever about events other than his utterance at the crime scene, I ain't got nothing to do with this. On the 29th of April 2001, Cook belatedly offered a declaration to the effect that he would be willing to testify and that both he and his brother, quote, had nothing to do with the shooting or killing of the policeman, unquote. The statement inculpates Kenneth Freeman as being armed with a .38 caliber firearm present in Cook's vehicle passenger seat immediately prior to the confrontation with Daniel Faulkner, wearing a green army jacket of a fashion described by as many as four of the witnesses observing at the time, and admitting to planning to kill Faulkner and participating in his shooting. Freeman's handcuffed and naked corpse were discovered in a vacant lot in North Philadelphia the day after the police bombing of the MOVE communal residence in 1985, and neither his name nor the fact of his presence at the crime scene was raised at any stage during the course of the trial and sentencing in 1982. At the time of his death, Daniel Faulkner was in possession of the replacement temporary driver license of Arnold Howard, which the latter had recently loaned to Freeman for unspecified purposes. Several others made statements that supported Abu Jamal's case. William Singletary has stated that he directly witnessed the entire incident, that he would be willing to testify that Abu Jamal was not the gunman. His post-conviction review hearing testimony of the 11th of August 1995 described that police tore up two of his written statements and that he was prevailed upon to sign a different statement which they dictated. William Harmon, a pimp in 1981, testified in an August 1996 post-conviction relief hearing that he had seen a man other than Abu Jamal execute Faulkner and flee in a car which pulled up at the crime scene. Court stenographer Terry Maura Carter stated in an affidavit of August 2001 that in the presence of herself and two others, the presiding judge had exclaimed, "Yeah, and I'm going to help them fry the nigger," regarding Abu Jamal's case shortly before the start of the trial. On the 24th of April 2003, Kenneth Pate, the stepbrother of Priscilla Durham, swore a declaration incorporating the following relevant content. I read a newspaper about the Mumia Abu Jamal case. It said Priscilla Durham had testified at Abu Jamal's trial that when she was working as a security guard at the hospital, she heard Abu Jamal say that he had killed the police officer. When I read this, I realised it was a different story from what she had told me. As when I'd asked her, "Did you hear him say that?" she answered, "All I heard him say was, 'Get off me, get off me. They're going to kill me. They're trying to kill me.'" Unquote. Pate reported that the conversation occurred sometime around the end of 1983 or the beginning of 1984. While he was in the same prison as Abu Jamal, his affidavit was released during another period in which both he and Abu Jamal were housed in the same prison, a time postdating the death of Miss Durham. Pate's affidavit has been tendered as evidence by Abu Jamal's lawyers to the US Court of Appeal in 2006. In corroboration of the four prosecution eyewitnesses, Robert Harkins testified August 2, 1995, that he had witnessed a man stand over Faulkner as the latter lay wounded on the ground, who shot him point blank in the face and who then walked and sat down on the curb. A .38 caliber handgun Abu Jamal had purchased to defend himself as a cab driver in 1979 was found at the scene next to him, containing five spent shell casings. Coroner Dr. Paul Hoyer, who autopsied Daniel Faulkner, recorded in the examining report that he extracted a .44 caliber bullet, noting, quote, "shot W/44 cal, unquote. He later testified to the effect that his description of it had been a rough guess based on his own observations, that he was not a firearms expert, and that he had not received any training in weapons ballistics. Tests performed with the available physical evidence verify that Faulkner was killed by a .38 caliber bullet. The extracted slugs, identified as Federal brand .38 Special Plus P bullets with hollow bases. It may be noted that the hollow base in a Plus P bullet is distinguishable from Federal ammunition otherwise used at that time. The type, brand, and caliber of the extracted bullets all match those of the shell casings obtained from Abu Jamal's Charter Arms revolver, which was retrieved at the scene. That manufacturer is known for rifling the barrels of their revolvers with 8 lands and grooves in a right-hand direction of twist. Characteristics also evident of the bullet fragments extracted from Faulkner's body. Anthony L. Paul, supervisor of the Firearms Identification Unit for the Philadelphia Police, testified at trial that he could name two other manufacturers, quote, "right off the bat," unquote, which produce weapons bearing the same exact rifling characteristics of pattern and twist direction. Experts testified that the bullet taken from Abu Jamal had been fired from Faulkner's service weapon. George Fasnacht, a ballistics expert proffered by the defense, did not dispute any of the findings of the prosecution's weapons and ballistics experts. Amnesty International has made reference to the physical evidence to the extent of expressing their view that there was, quote, "a lack of adequate ballistic tests to determine whether Abu Jamal's gun had recently been fired. It was not determined, for instance, whether there was residue on his hands from firing a gun," unquote. In a 1995 hearing, another defense ballistics expert testified that due to Abu Jamal's struggle with police during his arrest, such a test would have been difficult to accomplish, and due to gunpowder residue possibly being shaken or rubbed off, would not have been scientifically reliable.